This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Today, we are going to talk about ventilation and COVID-19. Now, we've been doing a lot of sanitizing and disinfecting throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. We've been cleaning common areas, high-touch surfaces, even our groceries. But healthcare professionals have been urging for more attention to be paid to improving ventilation instead, in a bid to continue curbing the spread of COVID-19. So to help us clear the air on this, we are joined by Dato' Professor Dr. Adiba Kamaruzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. How are you today, Prof. Adiba?
Very well, Xiaoyik. Good to see you again.
You too. In the meantime, if there are questions for Prof. About this issue of, whether and how we should be ventilating our spaces, how else do you think we should disinfect and clean our surfaces? If you have any questions about how it relates to your daily practices, you can call us 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. But first, Prof. Adiba, I was really excited to see that you had received your COVID-19 vaccination. Congratulations, I think.
Yes. I had it last Monday as one of the frontliners at PPUM. As you know, PPUM is a hospital that takes care of COVID-19 patients. So my colleagues and I actually do see patients on a day-to-day basis. So I'm alive and well. I had a little bit of tiredness after the injection, but that's about it, really.
All right.
And I'm looking forward to my second dose in 2 weeks' time. Well, under 2 weeks, yeah.
And, why would you urge other Malaysians and everyone else, really, to get vaccinated?
Because I think the evidence is overwhelming that this vaccine is, in countries where they have been vaccinating thousands, if not millions of people, that it's really, really reduced the hospitalization rates, reduce deaths, and reduce the severe form of the disease. And, data is also emerging that it's going, it has helped reduce transmission as well. So there is no question about it. I think that we all need to be, for those of us who are eligible, should be vaccinated as soon as possible.
And speaking of reducing transmission, let's go back to basics a little bit before we can talk about how to reduce transmission in our environments. So if you could give us a refresher on how the SARS-CoV-2 virus is transmitted and, whether our understanding of it has changed since we first got to know this virus last year.
Yeah, sure. I think there's been quite a bit of confusion as to how the SARS-CoV-2 that causes COVID-19 is transmitted. I think we all recall exactly a year ago, some people were leaving their newspapers and mail out in the hot sun in the hope that it will kill the virus, and washing fruits and vegetables from the markets, etc. But a year on, I think we have a much better understanding of how this virus is transmitted. And to date, conclusive evidence suggests that the dominant route of transmission of SARS-CoV-2 that causes COVID-19 is via the respiratory route. And direct contact and fomite, that's our fancy word for surface transmission, are presumed, but are likely a mode of transmission in very sort of unusual circumstances. I think one of the things that created this confusion was a study that I can talk about later on in terms of the concern that surfaces are a major form of transmission.
Mm.
So let me expand on this a bit on in terms of the respiratory transmission. So when a virus spreads to through what we call respiratory transmission, it does so either with the little viruses suspended on large droplets of little aerosols that are expelled from, you know, our nose and mouths when we speak, when we sing, when we laugh, when we cough, when we sneeze. So, and there's also been a lot of confusion around terminology, around what the healthcare profession call droplets and aerosols. So droplets are classically considered to be particles, larger particles that are larger than 5 microns, and they fall to the ground within about 6 feet. So that's hence this physical distancing and the 6 feet rule, mm-hmm. right? The 2 meter rules, because the SARS-CoV-2 virus belongs largely to this group of, you know, 5 microns diameter. But there's also increasing evidence that it can also be aerosolized, that smaller particles than smaller than 5 micrometers that can remain suspended in the air for prolonged periods, and hence the importance of ventilation as well. So under certain circumstances, including in hospitals, what we call aerosol generating procedures, when people are intubated, when we do certain procedures, like I said, when we sing, or in indoor environments with poor ventilation, the virus can be transmitted at a longer distance through this aerosol transmission. And, you know, there it is increasing, I mean, a lot of evidence that distance is a key to transmission risk.
So knowing what we know about the potential of it being transmitted through aerosols, does that mean that 6 feet or 2 meter distance isn't good enough?
By and large, the biggest mode of transmission, we think, is the droplet transmission. It does, most studies show that the distance, the 6 meters, 6 meters, pull out, 6 feet, within 6 feet is the safe distance.
All right.
When I say aerosolized generating procedure and singing, and, you know, it but on a normal interaction, the 2 meters, 6 feet is adequate.
Because you wouldn't typically be singing at somebody.
No, coughing,
at such close distances. Then you mentioned...
And hence the importance of wearing a mask, because it limits the amount of virus being expelled from the person who's talking, mm-hmm. or singing, or laughing. And to some extent, it blocks both ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you've mentioned the direct contact with surfaces. So where does that mm-hmm. come in?
So this direct contact, there was an original study that found survival of the SARS, both the original SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2, on certain surfaces of up to 2 or 3 days in a laboratory experiment. But this laboratory experiment used a very large, what we call inoculum, 10^5, 10^7 particles in these different experiments, looking at the presence of virus on different types of surfaces. Now, in a normal situation, you're not going to get this large amount of, in a real life situation, you're not going to get this large amount of virus. And we know that from previous studies of human coronavirus, which is a family that SARS-CoV-2 belongs to, including the original SARS virus, that viruses don't survive for more than an hour after drying out on surfaces, whether it's aluminium or wood or those kinds of things. So those studies used very, very large amount of particles. And there was the Italians, you know, remember the Italians had a very big outbreak last year. Mm-hmm. So they've also looked for the virus in real life. So that original study was a laboratory study that had a lot of particles that showed that, you know, the viruses survived a lot longer than was expected. But when Italian investigators looked at the hospital that had a lot of SARS, a lot of COVID-19 patients, they actually didn't find a lot of viruses on surfaces. And except for one in the helmet of a patient who was positive for the infection. But importantly, when they attempted to try and grow the virus, they were unsuccessful. So, and also from large from other studies, we've not, in real life studies, we've not been able to show that the fomites or the surfaces are a major source of infection. So most of the studies point towards respiratory transmission, particularly indoors.
So what do we take away from this then? Do we still need to be diligently disinfecting, wiping down surfaces, tables, kitchen counters? Well, you know, kitchen counters obviously for other reasons, but, you know, the way that we are wiping down things now, like you said, even food packaging, our mobile phones, you know, so.
I think maintaining hygiene is always important for this virus, for virus that causes diarrhea, but it doesn't need to be excessive. I mean, you know, we don't need to be spraying Mount Kinabalu like we saw happen last year. We don't need to close down an entire factory or entire shopping malls just because we have two or three cases. I think this has been happening a lot. And my concern is, A, it costs, you know, the companies a huge amount of money each time this happens, not just in terms of hiring people to come in and do this terminal cleaning, as it's called. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you know, businesses have to shut down for 24, 48 hours to allow this to happen. When, you know, normal cleaning, because these viruses actually, you know, are quite amenable to just normal cleaning.
Yeah, cleaning with normal detergents and disinfectants.
Yeah, so you don't have to go spraying and, you know, going all out, as it's called, theater hygiene. It makes a lot of people feel like they're doing something, but it's really excessive and unnecessary. I think investment would be better put into ensuring that you have adequate ventilation, you have good air exchange, and all those things, and ensuring that your employees and people who come and visit you wear the correct mask.
Would there be certain circumstances where we do need to do that kind of deep cleaning? Because you said if there are only 2 to 3 cases, there's no need to shut down the whole shop or shopping mall to clean it. But if it's a large enough cluster, would it be indicated?
I think you would have to investigate the cluster first and where it's coming from. Like in our hospital, whenever we have even one healthcare worker who's infected, we will investigate it thoroughly. And usually what we find is people congregating in rooms that are, you know, that you have more people than it should be in there, rather than surfaces. Because if it was really transmitted by surfaces, I think we would be in a much bigger problem than we would have right now.
Absolutely. I'm speaking to Dato' Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarulzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University of Malaya, and we are discussing where ventilation comes in reducing COVID-19 transmission. And Prof has already brought up that, you know, the resources used on hygiene theatre, you know, the kind of massive disinfecting exercises would be better spent on ensuring adequate ventilation and good air exchange. But what does that really look like, especially when we consider so many of our indoor spaces are fully air conditioned and closed up? What can we do? How exactly will it help? We'll come back after the break to discuss that. If you have questions, call us 0377332900, WhatsApp 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. I already do have a question here from Zaidi, which I will get to when we come back from these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarulzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University of Malaya. Our topic is COVID-19 and ventilation. Now, we've been doing so much of sanitizing and disinfecting, even, you know, large scale spraying of a lot of our environments and spaces in order to clean out the virus, I suppose, and reduce its transmission. But what we are hearing now from a lot of healthcare professionals, from a lot of experts, based on research, and Prof. Adiba has really just broken it down for us as well, is that we need to remember the main source of transmission is via respiratory droplets, the larger droplets, which are more than 5 microns in diameter, and they tend to fall within 6 feet, and hence that 6 feet or 2 meter physical distancing that we are encouraged to practice. Only in certain circumstances, in healthcare settings, there may be transmission through aerosols, and that's through aerosol-generating procedures and not so much for general activities that we're doing.
Sorry, Shaik, if I may interrupt you there. It's not only in healthcare settings. Mm. That, you know, even in normal settings, if you know, there is lots of, I mean, if you are kind of this singing and
yes,
laughing.
Yes, you used the example
that,
of singing.
Can still
yeah.
be aerosolized.
Yes, yeah. yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're really expelling those mm-hmm. droplets.
Correct.
And that's why the use of masks has been normalized and should continue to be normalized. But you've already brought up the need for adequate ventilation and good air exchange. And that's something that we should be focusing now on. And perhaps we're not seeing enough attention on that. But, you know, just very quickly coming back to the transmission of COVID-19 or the virus that causes it through contact with surfaces. We have Zaidi here with a question. Do we really need to shower after we come home every day?
Well, I think that would depend on how hot you are, but specifically on having the virus on you, as I pointed out before, they don't survive all that long on inanimate objects, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours. And really the most important part of this is cleaning your hands, because, you know, the hand hygiene part of it, because, you know, if for objects that, let's say the person who has the virus is, you know, very close to, and there may be surfaces that they have, you know, that they're at, and then you happen to touch it within that first couple of hours that the person is there, and then you touch your face. That's how contact, and that's why we stress on cleaning your hands. But if you know, you're just walking around, and then it's not going to stay on alive for very long.
Mm, there was a concern about staying on clothes and
yeah.
fabrics, and a lot of people were in the practice of immediately chucking their clothes into the wash the moment they're out from outdoors.
Yeah, I mean it's good practice, but I think it's more important to clean your hands frequently.
I think the problem with all this is that we're not discarding good hygiene practices, but when you're ignoring it for other more important ones like hand washing and now ventilation, that's where the problem is. So, you know, when we're talking about ventilation now, how exactly would that prevent or reduce the transmission of COVID-19?
So ventilation, and I'd like to point out that there is a very comprehensive and detailed guidance from the WHO that was just released, I think, earlier this week, describing the standards that's required for hospitals, for residential buildings, for buildings. I'm no building engineer or, or architect, so I'll try and do my best. But I would urge your readers to refer to this document from the WHO called Roadmap to Ventilation for Mitigation of COVID-19 or something like that. Let me get the exact roadmap to improve and ensure good indoor ventilation in the context of COVID-19. So what happens when you have ventilation, which means bringing clean air into the area, is, you know, the best and cheapest possible way, and especially, you know, taking advantage of our climate, is to open our windows. You know, open all windows and all doors, provided there's no pollution outside, as much as you can. And the next cheapest way is, if you can't, you know, open the windows and doors for whatever reason, then to have a fan. But when you have a fan, be careful where you place the fan, because you don't want the fan to worsen the transmission of the virus. So ideally that fan should blow things out, right? Not into the person. So it has been suggested, one helpful strategy is to use a window fan placed safely and securely in a window to exhaust room air to the outdoors. Okay. So, and this will help draw fresh air into room by other open windows and doors without generating strong room air currents. There's a study in China, which China or Japan, I can't remember, which really illustrated how the room air current, because of poor ventilation, led to 15 people getting infected, although they were more than 6 feet apart, because the air was just circulating and all those people within that air circulation got infected. Whereas people who were less than 2 meters apart but were not in this air current didn't get infected. So that illustrates how crucial you know, the air movement in a small confined space is.
So that's of huge concern for us if we're looking at restaurants. A lot of people sitting at tables together in an air-conditioned space. A listener has messaged in to ask about ventilation in cinemas. And I'm thinking, just looking around offices as well. These aren't spaces that are typically opened up for ventilation.
With cinemas, and I know there's been a call to reopen cinemas, I think it is important that, you know, cinema owners look at the ventilation aspect of it, because you're not going to be able to have open windows, right? And the air exchanges. The good thing about cinemas is you can space people out, and generally people are sitting there quietly. You just have to make them wear their mask. You know, so activities that generate, you know, these aerosols are a little less likely in cinemas. But, you know, the risk is never zero, right? So, but like what you said earlier, Shao-Ik, you know, we need to put our attention, put our minds and focus on how we can improve things to minimize the risk as much as possible whilst allowing businesses to reopen. And you pointed out restaurants. Restaurants and gyms, unfortunately, have been places where you know, a number of clusters have arisen. And that's because when we eat, we have to take our masks off. And so, you know, if your community has still has a reasonably high level of transmission and you choose to go and eat out, then you might want to consider eating out al fresco, you know, instead of inside a restaurant, especially a small cramped restaurant. But restaurant owners also need to look into how they can improve their ventilation, you know, because I don't think we can afford another lockdown. So during this period, we should really be trying and aiming to put all these measures in place. It may be a little bit more investment, but, you know, if it can reduce the risk and help us remain in business long, you know, without needing more episodes of lockdown, I think it might be worth the investment.
What about schools? Do we have any evidence to show that ventilation will help protect children?
So whether it's schools, whether it's buildings, the principle is, you know, have, you know, as good a ventilation and airflow as much as possible, and then the distancing as well. And like I said, I think we should really be thankful that we have the climate that we have. Yes, it's hot, but at least, you know, compared to the cold winters that force people in the UK, in US, and in Europe to go indoors, I think there's still quite a bit we can do to take advantage of our climate, our natural ventilation, and minimize the risk.
Have you seen any interesting case studies or any innovative ideas that would help us to improve ventilation in spaces where in offices where you don't even have windows that can be opened? You know, what are some practical ideas there?
Yeah, so the next step up would be, and we do this in some areas in our hospital, is to put in those HEPA filters, those portable HEPA filters. They're a little bit more costly, but be sure that you buy the right ones, and that's also one way of doing it.
All right. Would those be helpful in home settings? Do people need to invest in those for their homes?
You know, I think it depends. I think, sure. But, you know, in homes, unless you live in it depends on the size and density of your house as well, right?
Mm. All right.
You know, opening windows is really the cheapest and healthiest solution.
Absolutely. Yeah. We also have a question here from Vimalan, who's wondering, you know, if you are with other passengers in a car, the mm-hmm. air condition is on, windows are up, but if you are not holding a conversation, if you're not talking to each other, would that help reduce transmission?
It will not be zero. So, you know, I think be sure to wear masks, and I would have at least some windows down. You know, it's such an easy thing to do, isn't it? And it's, you're not going to get so hot if you have both, have the aircon on and windows down.
All right.
It only needs to be like a little bit down just to let the airflow through.
It's the air current that you were talking about.
Correct.
All right. We'll go for a quick break and just come back quickly to look at ventilation in among people who need to be quarantining if they've come into contact with someone who has COVID-19, and find out a little bit more about how healthcare facilities are improving ventilation as well, apart from just the HEPA air filters that you mentioned, Prof. Adiba. So I'm speaking to Dr. Professor Dr. Adiba Habibah Kamaruzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. Do get in your questions for Prof. You can call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio if you'd like to find out more about how your cleaning activities, your daily routines can how you can reduce the transmission of COVID-19. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Tee Shao Ik. I'm speaking to Datuk Professor Dr. Habibah Kamaruzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. We're discussing COVID-19 and ventilation, and we've covered a lot of ground, and including some really simple practical tips, which include really just opening all your doors and windows as much as possible if you're in a space that allows you to do so, and not crowding your spaces as well, so you can ensure good air exchange and reduce transmission of COVID-19 through those respiratory droplets. Prof. Habibah, you mentioned a little bit about ventilation at healthcare facilities, and what you're doing in some spaces is to use HEPA filters or the air filters. But, you know, when we're talking about in settings where there are COVID-19 patients, there are healthcare workers dealing with them, or even at homes where people are quarantining or isolating themselves if they've come into contact, why is ventilation particularly important there?
Okay. First, let's take healthcare facilities or hospitals. Yeah, of course, the maximum or the most the best kind of room for patients with COVID-19 is to have a negatively pressured room that's double doors, that has, you know, air exchanges of at least 12 air exchanges or 6 air exchanges, depending on the size of the room and so forth, and depending on whether you're doing aerosol generating procedure or not. So there are specific standards that have to be met in hospitals, and different places in the hospitals have different requirements. So like I said, like in theatre, in operating theatres, they need much higher air exchanges in rooms where we isolate COVID-19 patients, ideally in negative pressure rooms, but not all hospitals can provide that. If you can't, then, you know, the distancing patients at a minimum of the 6 feet, and making sure that patients and staff all wear the PPEs and all that. So that's why taking care of COVID-19 patients, even if they're not sick, is quite a to-do, you know, because we all have to gown and wear the mask, the special mask, etc. So there are many levels of minimizing risk. You know, one is the actual space and the air exchanges. Then it's a personal protection, you know, as something as simple as wearing mask or the full PPE.
So not one thing protects?
Not one thing.
But the layers, yep.
The layers, the Swiss cheese thing. And then, of course, finally, the washing and cleaning your hands. Yeah.
And coming to people who are isolating at home?
So that's a little bit more tricky, isn't it? Particularly if you have a lot of, I mean, you know, if you don't, you're not able to provide your own room. And so ideally, you know, if the person is isolating at home, they should really stay in their rooms, and keep their masks on, you know, and not share cutlery, etc.
So and while they're in whatever space that they're able to isolate in, those, you know, guidelines of keeping your windows open with a fan blowing outwards, that still applies.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We have Anne who's asking, you know, in an open air restaurant, if I'm sitting alone and my back is about 3 or 4 feet from to another person sitting at the next table, not facing that person, can I still get droplets from other people?
So I think it's important to remember that, you know, you can never eliminate zero transmission for as long as there is SARS-CoV-2 in the community. But there are things that you can do to minimize it, and also in terms of your level of acceptance of risk, right? So sitting outdoors versus sitting indoors, the risk of indoors is 18 times more than sitting outdoors. You know, indoor activities has 18 times more risk than outdoor activities. That's number one. Number two, like we said, you know, normally the most of the droplets will fall within 6 feet. But if there is a wind or something that will carry the virus, there is always a risk. But, you know, outdoors, it disperses the little aerosols. And so the risk becomes much, much lower.
All right.
Especially if your back is to the person, then the risk, you know, it's never zero. And how do you quantify this? You can't, right? But it would seem like it's a very, very low risk.
And that's the problem with understanding and applying that understanding mm-hmm. of risk in daily life. There's no clear yeah. answer.
You know, and it's we can't sort of say that it's going to be ever be zero until we eradicate this virus completely. I think let's take the analogy of getting into a car, right? You cannot eradicate or eliminate your chances of having an accident and dying from it, you know, God forbid. But you reduce the risk by driving at the speed limit, you put on your seatbelt, you use your indicators. So these are all the things that you do to minimize your risk of getting into a car accident. You don't drink drive and all of that, you know. And likewise, with COVID-19, you have to make an assessment of knowing, you know, right now in KL and Selangor, yes, the transmission is going down, but it's still not zero. And so you make that assessment. But these are the things, you know, eating outdoors, much lower than eating indoors.
And I think those are simple enough rules of thumb that we can use uh-huh. when we need to decide. Uh-huh. But on a larger level, you know, how does this understanding about ventilation factor into decisions that are made about what kinds of activities to allow or to restrict?
If I can be brutally honest, it also baffles me. Again, it goes back to what is the level of community transmission that's going on at the moment. You know, there cannot be a homogeneous rule. It, for instance, Perlis has very few incidents at the moment compared to Selangor and KL. Perhaps, you know, opening up in Perlis is okay, but, you know, we need to still restrict mass gatherings. Kanduris and all that in places where there is still transmission. So therefore, knowing, you know, having really precise data of what's happening at your local level is very important. There's a mantra in the HIV world, know your epidemic, know your response. Yeah, and it applies here as well. Yeah.
From the questions that I'm seeing from listeners, it does seem like people sort of need more guidance in terms of when it relates to their daily activities, you know?
Yeah.
And so now Sue is asking how best to handle visits to each other's houses because you can't be wearing a mask all the time. Would keeping that 1 or 2 meter distance be good enough?
Yeah, so first of all, you know, there's this concept of bubbles, right? I don't know if you've heard, Sue, about this concept of bubbles. So you know, people within your household and within your families, it's still not zero risk once again. But try and keep the numbers down. Try and meet in, again, it goes back to what is the level of transmission in your area at the moment, right? If you're meeting indoors, I sound like a broken record, make sure your doors and windows are open and all of that. Or if you still don't feel safe, then meet in the garden, for instance. And yes, ideally, if you hear there's a fair bit of infection around your area, then it might be wiser to keep the mask on. And so here's the good news. I'm giving a plug on the vaccines, right? I'm the lucky one who's already been vaccinated, and I want to use this plug to encourage as many people to get vaccinated when you're called up. Because today or yesterday or today, the CDC has released this new guidance that, you know, if your family, if your whole, the whole group of you have had two vaccines, then you can meet indoors without the mask on. So here's an impetus for all of us to get vaccinated as soon as possible, you know, when you're called up. I know there's an issue with, you know, the queues and vaccine supply, but when you're called up, please get yourselves vaccinated.
And register.
Please register, and when you're called up, get yourself vaccinated.
Very importantly, register, because then you'll know that your name is in the list already.
No register, no get vaccine.
That's a plug right there. Just very quickly as a final message, Prof. What can we do to get this message across? You said you sound like a broken record, but I think it's possible that not many people are aware of how important something as basic as good air exchange is. And you still see places that are implementing the wrong kinds of measures, insisting on you wearing plastic gloves before you go into the supermarket, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So what more can we do to spread the gospel of ventilation?
Yeah, so I think maybe an adaptation and adoption of this very comprehensive WHO guidelines is necessary. A few of my colleagues and I are trying to do that. At least we are first of all, you know, charity begins at home. So we're actually looking at the WHO guidelines and making sure that our own hospital complies. So I'm working with colleagues from the Faculty Alambena and engineering to kind of do. We have been doing this throughout the last year, making sure that, you know, we comply. But now that there's more detailed guidelines, we will do that. And I think that there needs to be national guidelines and policies.
All right. Thank you so much, Prof. I've been speaking to Dato' Professor Dr. Adiba Kamaruzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya, and we've been discussing ventilation and COVID-19. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.